Okay, episode 4 of the pod, hitting you right now. Pretty excited about it. Mission-minded episode 4, this is the Messick crew. Amazing people. Matt and Christy are just incredible, and it's a bit of a long podcast. I'm just going to jump into it, but you're going to get to hear the difficulties that they had getting into the missionary field, the brutal things that can happen to you psychologically with that, but then also finding themselves in the place that God has for them now, impacting people's marriages. It's a beautiful story, and it's just story after story after story. You're not going to hear me much, but let's get right to it. You're going to have a lot of fun.
All right, Matt and Christy, how you doing tonight?
Hey, we're doing good.
Nice to talk to you, Aaron.
Awesome. Thank you for joining me tonight. I'm really excited to get to talk to you. I've been kind of excited about this all month, so hopefully you're excited too.
We sure are. Nice to chat. Nice to say hello to folks in Salida.
Well, we'll just kind of dig into things if we can. I've got there's a lot to get to talk about. So why don't we just start by what first took you into the mission field, and how long ago was that? Can you kind of give me a story of going from Grace Church to the mission field?
So it was probably even before we made it to Grace in 2001, and it's a really long story, so you'll get the short version. 2001, Matt and I both got on the same bus in the middle of West Africa. And that was the beginning of our relationship, our marriage, our whole family, but also realizing that God was calling us to be living not North America and finding ways to serve him. So we've been pursuing missions ever since we first met, a long time now.
A long time. Yeah, so we were Christy was working in Burkina Faso doing microcredit loans, and I was working in Nigeria as a high school teacher with Nigerian high school. And like Christy said, we had some time off, we got on the same bus, and pretty quickly we knew that we didn't want our time of getting to know each other to end. So we figured out, got married a year later, and just felt like God was continuing to lead us into missions. And
when our first little guy was born, when Jonah was born back in 2004, in 2005, we went back to West Africa with him just to kind of see what it would be like trying to serve in West Africa with a little person. And then after that, we moved down to Salida in 2006, and we became part of Grace Church in 2006. But shortly after we had gotten there, we actually met the Campbells. They had come to share at the church, and because of the West Africa connection, we wanted to spend more time with them and had them over for a meal. And we had been in the process of looking at missions with another mission organization, but the Campbells said, "Why don't you look at World Venture?" So they were kind of the catalyst for getting us further into missions again through World Venture. And we had originally thought we'd be looking at going back to West Africa, but God took us to South America.
I was just going to say, why? What turned you from Africa to South America? Was that just the mission, just World Venture, or was that some deeper calling there?
We really always thought we'd go back to West Africa. That was really where our hearts were. But the way God worked things, there was in Guatemala, they were looking for somebody who did construction to help build a training site for a ministry there. And they were looking for a nurse to do health education. And we kind of fit that bill really well. Matt did a lot of construction when we were living in Salida, and we felt like God was leading us towards that.
That's actually one of the stories I was hoping we'd kind of get to. And I'd like you to share a little bit about that, because one of the really unique parts about your story and testimony as a missionary is that you went to the fields, and then it didn't really work out the first time like you thought it would, right? Even though it seemed like it was the perfect fit. Can you tell me a little bit more about your time there?
Yeah, we sure can. And you're right, Aaron. It felt like it was a perfect fit for us. Like Christy said, there was a spot for her to use her nursing that was right up her alley, not just nursing, but teaching, health education, which she loves. And then, one of the reasons we came to Salida was because Deeslin was working on building a new hospital. And so, you know, I was a builder and just felt like there was work also to build a training center. It felt like it was a match made in heaven. It just felt great. The people we're going to work with were going to be great, and it was all going to be great. So.
Enter that little problem called money.
Yeah, it wasn't quite so great. Anyways, so in the end, I don't know how much. Yeah. In the end, it didn't work out the way we expected. And there had been some miscommunication long before we were even part of the project. And when that miscommunication was communicated correctly, all of a sudden we weren't needed. We weren't needed there. And it was, yeah, we came back to Salida.
It was hard. It was really hard.
Thanksgiving, and it was tough. Yeah, it was not what we expected. One of the things as a new missionary, you're so excited to feel like God's leading you, and you've spent all this time raising the funds, and you're excited to go. And unfortunately, a lot of times it doesn't work quite like you expect. And that kind of let down, it was hard for us. And our friends that were around that time in Salida, they probably could tell some stories about us coming back and being surprised. And
it was 8 years ago.
It was not easy. And that's there's a lot under that. It was not easy. But
we were just talking to somebody 3 days ago. They were reaching out for help. They're in another country facing a very similar situation, and we're reaching out for some encouragement. And it was really interesting to retell the story a little bit with them by Skype, and for it to be a huge encouragement to them, because the wife said at the end, she said, you know, I don't want to feel good about what you guys went through, but it gives me hope because you're still on the field.
Right. I wanted to dig into that a little bit, because I think, like you said it, Matt, like you feel like you're going into the mission field. You feel like this is where God's calling me. I mean, to some extent, you've got to feel like this is all going to go, not easy, but this is where we're meant to go. It's going to go well. And so to all of a sudden be back in Salida, I can totally understand how that was disappointing. And I remember we had just kind of moved back to the church at that time. And I remember when you came back, and it was, you felt a little bit defeated, right?
It was more than a little bit defeated. Yeah. It was hard because one of the things that happens when you go on missions, you know, you go and you don't realize how much you're changing because you're experiencing new things, and God is changing you into the person he wants you to be. And when you come back, it's just, you feel like things should be the same, but they're not. And it's more because
you don't quite fit in the same as you did before.
Right. And anyway, so we come back and we were, yeah, kind of upbeat, and we used to do stuff in front and really good stuff. It was great. We really enjoyed our time and felt loved by Salida First Baptist at the time. But when we come back, not that we didn't feel loved, but man, it was hard.
We were tired.
Yeah, we were tired. And we didn't realize how, like, that expectation, how much it hurt to not have it be what we expected. Because, yeah, we did expect it to go well. I don't know. I don't know if you expect it to go, like, perfectly, but you don't expect that to happen, what happened to us. But it happens, unfortunately. It's somehow part of missionary stories.
Probably more often than you even know.
It's hard. And so anyways, but as we look at here, we are, like Chrissy said, 8 years after that, in the midst of that time, we were able to take some time and continue to spend time together, build our marriage, continue to ask questions. God, are you calling us to missions? We felt like he was doing that. World Venture had some options. We looked back to Africa as an option, but just didn't feel like that's where God was calling us. And so we looked at some other places in South America, and then we found Ecuador. And just really, we came here for a vision trip and felt like it was a fit to who we are.
It's so a fit to who we are.
Yeah. And so that's the, you know, kind of a short version to talk about those pieces. But you said it was hard when we first got back, for sure.
But then you can look back and say that God makes beauty out of ashes, out of something that we thought, well, are we even going to be able to continue in missions? And now we look where we are 8 years after we came back to Salida, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. Mm.
That's one of the things I love about that story, is that it mirrors so much of the life of a non-missionary too, because I think so many times we find ourselves in spots where we feel like, oh, God's put us in this spot. This is the perfect thing. And then all of a sudden it doesn't quite work out. And there's the, like you said, you're exhausted. You've tried to make it work when it really wasn't working. Maybe that's a job. I don't know. Who knows? And then, you know, there's even things like the social pressures and the difficulties of feeling like, I mean, you know, it didn't work for whatever reason, but at the same time, the stress of, okay, well, now we're trying to, like you said, re-enter in these relationships, and yes, you feel loved, but it's just difficult. And I think that happens to a lot of people who aren't in the mission field. And I do think it happens a lot more often than we know in the mission field. I mean, even our other missionaries, we've already talked to Ryan and Rebecca, and they, you know, they went to the mission field expecting one thing. Now they're in a different capacity. The Campbells spent time in Senegal, and then now they're in the Ivory Coast, which is not at all what they ever expected. So I think it's kind of becoming a fairly common story. And I think that was a great time where God was probably working on you. And that's what it sounds like you're telling me.
And it's part of learning that our expectations can cause a lot of trouble. And if we can leave our expectations and trust the Lord, things turn out differently than when somebody goes into anything, like you say, in life, in missions, in university, in relationships, with all these expectations. They can often kind of come crumbling down, and it's a farther fall than if we go in with fewer expectations and just willing hearts.
I love that. You combine the beauty from the ashes and changing your expectations. It's a couple of really good points for people to hear, I think. tell me, I want to ask you a couple other things too, because now you've uprooted your family, you know, a couple times, not uprooted. I don't know if that's the right term, but you've moved your family a couple times. Because now, how many kids do you have now?
Six.
Perfect. We that's six nothing. Well, so I mean, that's even a little bit more tricky than some people who are moving locations. You know, it's one thing to move down the street with two kids. It's another thing to move twice across countries with six kids. Tell me a little bit about what that's been like to have all six of your kids in the field with you.
It's been fun. Honestly, it's been fun. They have opened up a lot of doors for us. It's been a lot of change. I mean, our oldest, Jonah, is 15 now. And I think that he has lived in seven countries, a lot of places for not so many years. When we travel, there's a ridiculous number of passports, but the kids have done great. Being an MK is hard. You're not going to meet many MKs who say this was the most perfect thing. There's a lot of positives. There's a lot of negatives. There's a lot of transitions. There's a lot of sacrifices. Because there's an entire community within our house, it has made the whole thing a lot easier, because we're doing this as a big, huge group, and we've got a lot of support, and we're able to process through stuff. But they're great. They're well loved within the community here. And I don't know. I think for the most part, they've really thrived. I think it's been really cool to see. It's been really, so we'll go by numbers. Number five, JJ. We just had a Christmas presentation at the church on Sunday. And he just turned six in September. And so when he came here, he was just over a year. And he is really blonde still. And it's bothered him that people always want to touch his hair. And for a long time when he was little, when he was two, three, and four, he would always wear a hat. And it took us a long time to figure out that he was doing it so people wouldn't touch his head. But he's kind of not been so excited to be speaking Spanish around people and a little reticent. Well, on Sunday, he was in the presentation with his classroom Sunday school, and he had his two lines that he was practicing, and he said them on the microphone by himself with a spectacular Spanish accent. And he just it was just so cool to see him take one more step forward as far as I can do this and I can use these words and people can understand me. And he was pretty proud of himself, and I was really proud of him.
And another thing, Aaron, that I think has helped our kids a little bit with the transition is when we came to Salida, that was in 2006, our littlest, our oldest was 4 years old. 4 years old? Four.
No, he was two.
No. Jonah, he was four.
He was two. He was born in 2004.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. He was two. Two. We came with a two-year-old and a zero and a two-month. And then we were there for 4 years. So Jonah was six, I guess, when we went to go to language school in Costa Rica.
Yes.
In 2010. So what's interesting is
they don't know anything else.
They don't know anything else other than traveling. And so it's been fairly normal. So that hasn't been hard. Whereas there are some folks that, you know, say if we were going to go to the mission field starting now and we'd always lived in Salida, it can be a lot more difficult because those kids know all their friends. It's always been the same. It's been similar.
Like Ryan and Rebecca left with teenagers.
Right. And that can make things harder because all of a sudden, you know, a four-year-old, you say we're leaving. Okay, Mom, wonderful. What are we doing? You know, what are we eating tonight? They don't care about anything else. Mom and Dad are there. But you have a teenager, you're taking them away from their high school, their friends. It's more difficult. So on one of the things that I think has made that transition easier for us with our children is just the fact that we've kind of always done that. And then as we add more, they assume that that's normal, and just keep going. So that's been that. For me, I always look back a bit and say, I'm glad that God kind of took us when he started us off when he did, rather than 10 years later, and it would have been much more difficult.
If we ever drive down to the coast from here to go on holidays, it's 10 to 12 hour drive. And often we'll try and do it all in one day. And people are like, how do you do that? How do the kids do? But they've never known anything less than really long car drives, because as you're going to visit churches and you're going to visit supporters, you do 7, 8, 9 hour days. And so that was really good training that makes it easier here.
Well, that's kind of a unique deal as well, because it gives you a lot of family time to decompress too. Because when you're intense and in the mission community, and then all of a sudden you get a 10-hour drive, I got to imagine that could be pretty neat time to spend with your family as well.
It can be. It really can be sometimes.
So I want to talk more about your kids. 6 kids sounds so stressful to me. I have 1 3-year-old and I have no idea how you're surviving. I feel like there's a million questions, but I also feel overwhelmed when you say 6. I don't know what it is.
It's all gravy after 3, we tell everybody.
Oh, that's good. Well, I'm happy to hear that, because somebody told me that after 2 and I don't believe them anymore at all. So I'll trust you for now. No, he's great, but it's definitely, it's fun learning to how to parent. I think, and I feel fairly like we're in a pretty stable spot. So it's pretty awesome to hear that, hey, this is what our kids know and they've adapted, and you know, you haven't damaged any of them for life, I think. So that's good news.
I'm sure we've damaged them for life, but hopefully not too bad.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I want to read you something real quick, because I'm excited to get to talk to you more, because you know, we have on the webpage and also in the church, we have little flyers about kind of what our missionaries are doing. And I've followed you decently in the background. You guys don't know this, but I've kind of lurked, because you used to do kind of a blog, and obviously I knew who you were just from growing up in the church. And then I was kind of back and forth in college at the point when you were first in the Salida area, but to then, you know, get to see you come back the first time and see you a couple times since then, I've kind of been a lurker in the background. So I've paid attention a little bit. I know a little bit about what's going on. But this is, let me read you the paragraph that we have. Basically it says, Matt and Christy are members of Grace Church. They've been serving in Loja, Ecuador for the last years. Their focus is on building relationships, women's ministry, evangelism, and couples counseling. And then it talks about your children. That's a pretty quick sentence to talk about what you're doing in your ministry. And so I'm hoping you can expand a little bit and tell me what you're doing. And just give me more details, because I feel like building relationships, women's ministry. I know recently I've looked into a lot of the couples counseling you've done. That was the last time you came back. I know you talked about that. Can you just kind of tell me more about what you're doing? I feel like we need more details here.
Okay, great.
So really, I think you probably almost could switch the whole order now. I mean, building relationships really is what we do a lot of, but that's what we all should be doing in everything we do. Our primary ministry focus has been marriages for the last three and a half years. And it has been unbelievable just to see what God's allowed us to do here with couples. So a little background story, you'll think this is fun. When we came to Ecuador in 2014, so we came back to Salida in 2011, and there was a 3-year lapse in there. So when we got here to Ecuador, we wanted to do a little bit of brush up on our Spanish just to kind of keep moving forward and to help with that. And so there was a woman who would come and do Spanish classes with us every day for, I don't know, three, four months. And it was more conversational stuff, just kind of tweaking things and going into more advanced grammar. And she'd always bring these articles to read and then discuss. And she'd bring an article about marriages and we'd discuss it, and then she'd leave. And we'd keep talking about it because it was absolutely ridiculous to us, the things that we were reading about, affairs or forgiveness or fighting. And then she'd bring us another article about marriage. And we'd discuss it with her, and then she'd leave, and we'd be going for another 2 hours talking about this. And this kept going and going for a couple weeks before we really started to say, okay, what is going on here? Because how can marriages possibly be so difficult? Like, is the stuff that we're reading, is it true? Is it not? And we started to ask questions, and we started to... Anybody that we could talk to, we started to ask questions, and we really felt God take what we had thought we were going to do for ministry, which was to leave the city and go live out in the province and just build relationships and do evangelism and just support in whatever way we could. We felt like he just took us on this crazy curve to say, no, I want you to stay in Loha and I want you to work with marriages and I want you to help couples fight to save their marriages and to save their families and to put better roots under them so they can grow. It wasn't at all what we expected to do. But over the last 3.5 years, it has evolved into just a really, just a really exciting ministry. Like, it's just exciting to see the people that have gone through the marriage course and to see the people that are calling for counseling and to see, like just yesterday, 2 days ago, a woman called who I've only met once, but her mother-in-law did the marriage course. So the daughter-in-law, they keep saying they're going to, but her husband doesn't want to, so they haven't done it yet. But she has recommended us to another friend. So this is kind of like, I don't know, would you say three degrees of separation? Who's seeking marriage counseling. So the people that are coming to seek out marriage counseling now are people that we don't know, we've never met, and 99% of the time aren't believers. And that has been the coolest thing.
Talk to me a little bit about the marriage course. You said people coming to the marriage course. What exactly does the marriage course entail?
So it's an 8-week class that we meet at our house once a week for what, about 2 hours? 2 hours to anywhere.
2-3 hours, four.
3 hours, sometimes a little longer, depending how long people want to chat. And it starts about 7:30, and we have an icebreaker, and then we talk about a certain theme. So the first week talks a lot about men and women are different, and that's a good thing. Instead of men and women are different, it drives me insane. So we try to talk about that, and also men and women's roles in marriage, because that's no matter where you are, it's something that I think we fight against, and so we work on trying to share those perspectives.
Something we learned really quickly is that marriages are driven, and this is everywhere. Marriage is driven by the culture,
right?
And the culture is where people get their cues from and their guidance and their learning and everything else. So something that we have learned to do with the marriage course is we spend a lot of time all the way through juxtaposing. What does the culture say about X, Y, and Z? And what does the Bible say about X, Y, and Z? So even just the first week, like Matt's talking about, we talk about the roles of husbands and wives. And we say, what are the roles? What are the roles according to the culture, not in your house, but according to the culture here in Loha, which is a very unique culture in this city? You know, what does the culture say about a man's role, a husband's role? Or what does the culture say about a wife's role? And we make this chart. And then we say, okay, what does the Bible say about a husband's role and a wife's role? And then we write on the other side. And this is all the things that people are telling us. We're not feeding this information. And this is the most exciting thing or interesting thing is that we've done the course 11 times now. And always on the cultural side, when we say, what does the cultural say about a man's role or a woman's role? We've never once seen the word love show up.
Oh, interesting.
Never once. But always on the biblical side, one of the first words that comes up is the role of a husband or a role of the wife is to love their spouse. And just for people to see that and for us to point it out and say, how is it that the culture doesn't even take into account love? But the Bible does, sets the stage to be able to really teach what the Bible says about marriage and use it to kind of deconstruct the cultural ideas of marriage that are so harmful.
So each week there's a certain theme. So there's a theme about one of the weeks is talking about how to fight well, it's conflict. Another week is communication. We talk about the 5 love languages 1 week, trying to understand those. What else is there? We talk about
limits, boundaries.
Boundaries. Another one we talk about is persistence, being persistent in your marriage. Gosh, 1 week. And this is an interesting. It's some of the weeks are a little bit more fun to teach than other weeks. And this week that I'm talking about, it's not that necessarily fun to teach, but it's a great week. We talk about humility. And man, people start talking about it and we talk and they say, we don't understand quite. And we talk about it a little bit more and just realize how humility, man, it's just something that we don't think about a whole lot. We don't put in practice hardly at all. But what a great way to make your marriage better by being humble.
And people can't even, it's an interesting exercise to try. When you say to somebody, what is humility? We don't even really have the words always to describe what humility is, how to define it. And the last group we had, we said, okay, what is humility? And there was complete silence for a while because nobody could put into words to even begin to think about what it was. And the point is, well, how do we even begin to know how to practice it if we don't know what it is?
So then the last week we talk about, we call it sparks. So that's about intimacy and how to bring a little fun back into your marriage. It's a neat class. We didn't take something that was already made when we were starting to think about it. In our family, Christy is a super, super good communicator and is awesome at putting things together. And so we sat down and after we had been here about a year and a half and we were just getting to know the culture somewhat. And we interviewed some people, some friends of ours, and asked some questions and from things we know. And we came up with these eight different themes. That's how it turned out to be 8 weeks. And then based on what we saw were some issues in the culture and what we've had that have helped us. I think we actually took five love language courses at Grace however many years ago.
Really long time ago.
We were there. But we took these things that we learned and then we tried to make them culturally specific rather than just taking something that was already made. Family Life Today has great things, you know, what's in Colorado?
Focus on the family.
And so, you know, we kind of took the information that would be in those, but we tried to adapt it so it would work better here. And like Christy said, one of the things that's very powerful is what's the culture say about this one thing and what's the Bible say? And it's so stark, the difference that example is crazy. Love never shows up in what a husband or wife should do for their spouse, but it always shows up on the Bible side. It's crazy, that answer.
And something we really try to avoid doing is, you know, we are not from this culture. We're outsiders and trying to be respectful of the culture. It's not okay for us to say what you do is wrong. You know, you can't do it this way. But by doing this activity, and we do it almost every week, what does the culture say? What does the Bible say? They are giving the information and they're working through it. And collectively as a group, they're the ones saying, oh, there's a big difference. Without us having to be critical of the culture, we're just guiding that conversation. And I think that's been really, powerful.
I feel like I have a million questions. I was writing them down as we were going. That's part of the reason I don't like to send you questions beforehand, because I feel like my questions evolve as we talk. let me ask you a couple that I've got right away, because you're talking about the culture a lot, and I was thinking about that as you were going. What are the distinct differences, do you think, in the culture there versus the culture here? Because I think you hinted at it too, that marriage is hard everywhere, and there's a lot of these things going on. But what do you think the distinct differences are there? And kind of maybe a follow up to that, you mentioned love never comes up. Is that a cultural thing, or do you think that would happen in marriage classes around the world?
So culturally here, and just for a little bit of background, the city is in the very far south of Ecuador, and it's about 200,000. We're in a valley. We're in a mountain valley that sometimes, looking out the windows, looks just like the foothills in Salida, which was always really special. But we're in this valley that would take how long to go end to end?
It's 8 miles.
So 8 miles long, the city.
And about 2 miles wide.
It's small. It's really small, and everybody knows each other. Everybody's related to each other. And it's just this kind of like closed culture that isn't quite as influenced by all of, you know, it's just a little different than some other spots. So one of the biggest defining thing, and it's South American, I think, but we would try to say what we know for this culture is infidelity. So a guy is more of a man the number of women he has, and a woman gets married expecting her husband to cheat.
You take away the intimacy of a relationship, of course you're going to struggle with either feeling loved or showing love, right?
You bet.
So couples come together, often because they've gotten pregnant is often why they get together. They often don't actually get married. Finances are kept separate because there's always, you know, if I keep my own finances, if my husband cheats on me and leaves, at least I can support myself. Something else is cultural. And this is, I think, happening in North America too, is that children are more or less idols And here it's because, again, for a woman, well, her husband's probably going to run off anyways, but her children are her children, and they're not going anywhere. So it creates really unhealthy dynamics as well, because then we've got a messed up priority in the marriage. You know, here in the culture, the children are first, and then the family, and then work, friends. And then friends, and then the spouse.
At the end.
Whereas biblically, you know, people are really, it really opens eyes when we say, well, biblically, it should be God, your spouse, then your children, and then all the other stuff.
Right. I mean, how can you expect a marriage to stay together if all that other stuff is going to go away? Even your kids eventually are going to move out, right? And how does your marriage stay together if that's the focal point of your marriage?
Right. You know, there's another piece that's a difference in culture. And you know, we're making big, broad generalizations. So certainly,
of course, yeah.
You know, it's not like that 100%, but as a general rule. So another thing that's interesting you said about the children, people feel like blood is, yeah, there's more connection to your blood relative than there is to your husband or wife. And one of the reasons, and so your kids, right? Your kids are never going to leave you because they're always your kids, and there's no way that they can leave you. But your husband or wife, who knows what's going to happen with them? So then they invest much more time with family being your blood family, than necessarily you do with your husband or wife. And that plays into this with, you know, that person is the last person on your priority list. So a big struggle here is we call it mamitis and papitis. And so basically we would say in North America, they got to cut the apron strings, right? So people are like super attached to their moms. Son is super attached to their mom. And so
the translation is inflammation of the mother, inflammation of the father.
So what ends up happening is if, you know, a husband and wife have a fight, they've been married for 5 years or 30 years old, husband and wife have a fight, the husband will go back and say, mom, I'm fighting with my wife. Oh, it's okay, honey. You know, I don't know that I really ever liked her anyways. Come and stay with me.
I'll cook for you.
It'll be okay. Rather than what we would hope is say, you know, the mom could say, okay, you know, I'm not happy that you're sad, but go on over and you got to go work it out with your wife. This is your wife. And that has a tendency to roll over into a lot of things. And so there isn't this feeling of I'm committed to my husband or my wife. It's more like I'm committed to my family. Maybe my husband or wife helped me get there, but they're not as important. They're not as important. Chrissy has a great story. During that class, we're talking about limits, right? Is that limits?
Yeah.
We're talking about limits.
Yeah, boundaries.
Boundaries during that class. And so Chrissy came up with this really idea of a great way to try to describe how you should be attached to your blood family. And, you know, that's your mom and dad, your aunts and uncles, even your kids, and how you should be attached to your spouse.
So we have... They have super glue here, which is called la brujita, which means the witch, which is neither here nor there, but it's funny. And Velcro. So during this second week, we hold up both of these, this super glue and the Velcro. We say, okay, what are these and how do they work? What's the difference? And they say, well, you know, the difference is one, you can take apart again and the other one's permanent. Okay. According to the culture here in Loja, how is somebody attached to their spouse and how is somebody attached to their family? And 98% of the time, people will say, well, that's easy. You're attached to your family with super glue and you're attached to your spouse with Velcro. And then we go on to read the three times in the Bible that it talks about a man leaves his family and is united with his wife and they form
one solo ser.
No. What is one solo ser? There, the two become one.
Sorry.
And so we say, how should it be? And it's, again, it's mind-boggling for people to begin to think, I should be attached to my spouse with super glue, and I should be attached to my family with Velcro. I can come and go, and I can separate from them when needed. And it's funny, as we're talking about it, I just keep having that, you know, you say, well, how can you have a marriage if you don't have the priorities or if there's infidelities? And I just keep thinking about that verse that says, you know, it's talking about the gospel, but how will they know if they haven't heard? When you're in a closed culture that everybody lives this way, how could you know that there's even possibly a different way to live in a marriage unless somebody shares it?
So we had a couple come to the house last two Saturdays ago, and they were struggling. I can't remember. They were struggling. They were fighting and they were having a hard time. And so yeah,
he keeps having affairs.
Infidelity. And so as we talked about, you know, what was going on and what we were thinking, and they were encouraged and they were getting ready to go. And, you know, I was sharing with him, I said, you know, this struggle that you had of having affairs, it was more than once. Just because you decide, it sounded like he pretty firm. I don't want to continue like this. I'm really hurting my wife. I'm really, really causing her pain, and I don't want to do that. So I said, listen, you know, you're going to try to change something in your life, but it's very hard to do by yourself. And he also doesn't work in Loha, so he travels a bunch, gone for a week, back for the weekend, gone for a week, back for the weekend, which makes it even harder to be faithful to his wife. So I said, you know, you need to find someone to talk to a little bit about, to keep you accountable when you're struggling, to call up, say, man, I'm struggling with this, help me, you know, to come get you out of the bar or wherever it is. And so I said, you know, do you have anybody in your life that you could do that? And he thought for, I don't know, it was like half a second, like no time, basically. So I have nobody, not my dad or my grandpa or uncles, or certainly not my friends. He said, what my friends do when I say, man, I'm really struggling with my wife, we're fighting, they say, all right, let's go get drunk. And that's the solution, you know, just to forget about the problem. And so that's a really...
And we've heard this over and over and over.
One example of, and tomorrow in the morning, I'm going to go meet with a guy. That's the same thing. He struggled with infidelity, and he wants to make things different. But he and I are trying to meet to try to help keep him accountable on those kind of things, and help do some discipleship with him as he's trying. The man tomorrow is a Christian. This other guy was not a Christian. So, but a role model of how to be a man according to the way the Bible teaches, there aren't very many here in Loha. The church is only about 50 years old. The first believer around that time is here in Loha. So there aren't and very, very Catholic, and it didn't take off very quickly. And even now in the city, there's only, I think it's around 2,000. Is that right? 2,500 believers, 2,500 believers. So there's not a ton in the city of 200,000, but most of those folks are first
generation
Christians. So, you know, they became a Christian at 13 or 25 or 35. And now they're fighting the patterns from their past. And when you talk about a man, being a man means having a wife or more than one wife. And so
if your dad had an affair, your grandpa had an affair, all your uncles had affairs, your neighbors have affairs, your brothers have affairs.
Right. How do you break that cycle?
Right. And so, you know, that's one big piece that we see that feels different from at least the circles that we've been in. Christy and I growing up, my mom had four brothers and sisters. My dad had three brothers and sisters. There was one divorce, but it wasn't for infidelity. And so just think about just that here. Whereas if that was here in South America, there might be one or two of them that hadn't had an affair. So it's completely the opposite. So I think about, I have no ideas in my mind to be a better man. I need to find another woman to make me a better man. It's not even there. Whereas the opposite here, that may be something that goes through their minds very often, that that's just part of the culture. And so you want to talk something about something that makes it hard. And then the flip side of that is, if a woman knows that her husband's going to do that, is she going to want to submit? Is she going to want to talk? Is she going to want to share life? Is she going to share finances? Is she going to want to share her children? And so, you know, those two pieces that women need to be very independent, because probably something's going to happen with their husband, and husbands are struggling to be faithful. They are big differences that we've seen between the North American culture that we've been involved in and the Latin American culture here and around Loha.
It's interesting. I feel like, well, first of all, let me kind of sum up. I think you're right. I think that is a different culture. Yeah, I do think we struggle in the United States just as much as anywhere, but I don't think it's the same. We don't seem to struggle with, like you said, our family members being our, you know, I can just go back to mom or I can go back to dad. It seems like, especially in Colorado, at least, it's easier to leave and cleave. There's more people coming to Colorado that don't have their families around or things along those lines. So that's definitely a distinct difference, I think. I do think there's still a lot of these problems, but you're right. Even in my, in the circles that I know, the friends that I know, or the families that I know that have had divorces and stuff, it doesn't seem like there's nearly as much of that as what you're telling me from that culture. So that's interesting. It makes it, it makes it difficult. How, well, actually I want to ask another question first before I forget it. You talked about too, one of the nights that you discuss is roles of partners. And I think that's an interesting topic, especially because, you know, from my perspective and in the United States, this has become a big issue. You said earlier, we are different and that's a good thing. And especially in our marriages, what do you think the culture is like when it comes to that currently? And maybe, I mean, I'm sure you know that in the United States, that's become a huge issue, right? That we're all the same. and yet that's not what the Bible teaches. And so how do you relate that in your coursework? Does that make sense? I don't mean to, that's kind of a weird question, but
yeah,
it does. It's a hard one. I mean, we talk a lot about the differences in our marriage. We recognize the differences, but we also work together and we balance off each other's skills and abilities. And, oh, maybe you should clarify the question, because I think I misunderstood.
Oh, that's okay. So you talked about how one of the nights in your coursework, you talk about that there are, what did you say, the roles of the different partners, that men and women are different. And so in the United States right now, that's not a happy way of thinking. the United States, we think about how everyone is equal. And it's interesting because I think that in a healthy marriage, you do play upon each other's strengths and each other's weaknesses. And we are different people. And so can you tell me a little bit about that night? Because I think that really is going to be impactful to people in the United States, but just because that's a hard thing to talk about here in the United States, is how we actually are different. And there are good things out of that.
You know, I'm going to throw something in, and then Christy's itching to say your part. One of the things that we always try to do is we always try to go back to, what does the Bible say, right? So you're saying this part of the, at this time in the United States and other parts of the world too, right? There's this big question of, is there really any difference? And we try to keep pushing people back to, what does the Bible say? And we know the Bible says that there are differences. Sorry, go ahead.
And feminism is a huge problem here too right now. You know, women don't want to get married till they have their career. Again, with this idea, if I get married before I have my own career and my own 2 feet under me, when he cheats on me, what am I going to do? But when we have week six, we talk about humility, but that is all based around the idea of Ephesians 5 and love and respect. And we talk a lot about the fact that we don't go down to roles because the woman has to do this, the man has to do this. What we talk more about is, what does it look like if a husband is loving his wife well? And what does it look like if a wife is respecting her husband well? And if a husband's loving his wife well, does it make it easier or harder for her to respect him? And if she's respecting him well, does it make it easier or harder for him to love her? And we talk a lot about that circle and how wives can show, what are ways wives can show respect to their husbands? And what are ways that husbands can show love to their wives? And what does it look like when it's not happening? So we talk more about those things instead of trying to divide up roles in a family, because every family, every home is going to do it so very differently, depending on the people in the marriage, depending on the needs of the family, depending on the life stage. So more what we focus on is this idea of, in a well-functioning marriage, what does it look like to respect well? What does it look like to love well? And how does that make it all work a whole lot better?
I love that. I think that's something, that's kind of where I was hoping we would go, because it's such an easy way right now in the United States. If you say something like, hey, we actually are different and we have differences, it makes you seem like, oh, well, you're a horrible person. But you can, like you said, it doesn't have to be specifically, this is your role or that's your role. But what does the Bible talk about? What does that look like? And how does that actually build a stronger and healthier marriage? I don't know. I think that's important. I think that too often today in our culture, it's easy and for people to just say, well, you know, I'm going to be in charge of this, or I'm going to be in charge of that. And it's not a matter of who's in charge of what part of your marriage. It's just, there are differences and we play together. That's part of being a marriage, right? Is you're working together to get through life. So,
and the idea of being one solo sayer.
and they should become
unite.
One.
They become one. they become one. This idea of becoming one changes everything when you think about, okay, we're not two separate people. We're one. And how do we work together as a team? So it changes a lot, because that's kind of more our focus is, it's not about me winning and him losing, or him winning and me losing. If we're on a team, if I'm winning, we're both winning. And if he's losing, we're both losing. And so it's this idea of, how do you work your marriage? How do you work in your marriage? How do you love and care for each other so that the team is winning?
I love it. I think it's great. I was curious to get your thoughts on that. And I love, one of the things I love, and I try to point this out as much as I can when I talk to missionaries, is that you keep coming back to, what does the Bible say? What does the Bible say? What does the Bible say? Because it's a lot of missionaries. This is not the case really with our missionary group at Grace Church, but a lot of missionaries, they talk about going and living in a culture and, you know, living their life for Christ and then having that grow people. But there's definitely a point where you have to insert the gospel into these things, because truth be told, you talk about a husband that's cheating on his wife and doing it multiple times. You can talk about behavioral change. You can talk about habits that would make that better, but truly there's no healing without that gospel. And so to constantly bring them back to the Bible, that's the important part of the course, right? Is, what does the Bible say about that? And how does that gospel change your life through that?
And it's been really super cool to have, it's been really, really neat. There's been several stories, but one particular story of a guy who came to do the course, I don't know, 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
So husband and wife came, and she brought her sister and her sister's husband. So the sister and the sister's husband came, with this husband coming super reluctantly. And he, you know, the first week kind of sat with his arms crossed and didn't really want to be there, and started to get more and more engaged. But the first couple, they're believers and they go to church. The sister is also a believer and comes to church, but the husband doesn't want anything to do with it. And we got to, I don't know, week 7 or 8, when people stay later, and we were all standing around talking, and he said, you know something? He said, when I first came here, I didn't want to know anything about what that book says. And for whatever reason, we had a Bible on the coffee table that night, and he pointed at it, he says, about what that book says. He said, but through all these weeks, I'm really beginning to understand that that book holds a whole lot of wisdom and knowledge, and I want to know more about what it says.
That's awesome. That's exactly the point, right? Is that you're helping people lead to it. I think when they start to see the wisdom, like you said, they start to see, you know, we talk about this all the time. It's not a prosperity gospel. Life's not going to be easy when you become a Christian, but when you do start to see the wisdom, your eyes are start to be open to it. That's a pretty neat thing. And when you're talking about a situation like marriage, which, I mean, in the United States, for example, and you tell me what the stats are there, but it's like 50% end in divorce here. So you're dealing with such a difficult topic. And when you start to see growth, and when you start to see it, oh, I can have a loving relationship with these principles, I think it really does develop. What else is in this book? You know, do you see that there as well, do you think?
In some people that are not in an evangelical church often may have a Bible in the house that sometimes they turn the pages, but they don't ever read. You know, often there'll be a big, huge Bible that'll be on a coffee table in people's houses, and every once in a while they'll flip a page, but they don't read it and they don't understand that that's what's in there. There was another young guy in this last class, and they're not believers either. And he said, you know, my grandparents, he had an example of a husband that was faithful and, you know, lived with integrity. And he's like, I always watched my grandparents, but they read
the Bible too.
They read the Bible. And he knew nothing about the Bible, but as we go through the course, every week we've got all the Bible verses on the back of a little handout. And so people are reading the verses out loud, and he's reading these and he's going, this is really interesting. I had no idea that there was stuff like this in there. And it's just really neat. It's just so cool to see somebody who's never been exposed to these things saying, I didn't know it talked about that. I didn't know the Bible talked about communication. I didn't know the Bible talked about conflict. I didn't know the Bible talked about, well, obviously forgiveness, but I don't know what else, limits and all these things that people are just, So I never knew that that's what was in there.
You know, you're asking about divorce. I don't think we know the actual statistics, but it's at least equal to the U.S., maybe more, probably more. But one of the things that's happening here is lots of younger people, so say 30 and under, are just choosing to live together and not get married. And so, you know, and even as far as, you know, being together for 10, 15 years, three or four kids, basically the equivalent of being married, but they've never made that formal commitment. And
tell them what that guy said the other day.
What was that?
That the people that came a couple weeks ago, that he said, well, I grew up understanding that marriage was a, what did he say? Like marriage was a negative, bad thing. Mm. That you don't get married because that's just opening up the door to for suffering and do you remember what he said? How he said it?
I don't remember.
It was just I learned that you don't get married because it's not the right thing to do.
Yeah, that's something that I've dealt with relationships and friendships recently, of trying to counsel people, and the way that I've told them is don't be afraid of love, or so afraid to get hurt that you end up living a life without love. Because I think that's similar to what you're talking about. What he was saying is, man, if you get married, it's an easy way to get hurt. And it's like, yeah, but if you, by not doing that, you're missing out on so many of the great things that can come with marriage. I totally understand where that's coming from. I think a lot of people in the U.S. feel that way. Like, I don't want to get hurt, so I don't want to put my heart out there and risk it. And instead of realizing that there's a healthy way to go about it.
Well, and as we sit down, and so like you're asking the questions of what about the roles. So, you know, one of the things, as Christy was talking about the circle, if
the love and respect,
circle, right? I could tell myself I'm completely ready to be to love Christy very well, but not until she shows me respect. And Christy might say, I'll gladly show you respect, but not until you love me. And what we realize is the Bible says it doesn't matter whether Christy's doing a good job or not, I should show her love. And that's what I'm called to do. But then the concern is, what about me? What about me? What about me? But when we realize that marriage is not about just me being happy, but the two of us, when we start to understand that I need to live with humility, that I need to persevere, my priorities need to be right, all of a sudden, I need to learn how to love Christy, or I need to learn to love Christy in a way like from the five love languages, in a way that makes sense to her. All of a sudden, as I stop fighting for my happiness and start loving Christy better, the person starts loving their spouse better. By giving, it makes your marriage better. But that's like so countercultural, right? I mean, it's all
everywhere.
Everywhere. It's all about me and what's mine. I want mine and is it making me happy? And the fact of the matter is, marriage is hard and it doesn't always make you happy. But if I start to understand my role according to the Bible, we're talking about the Bible. When I understand my role according to the Bible and I do my role better, like Christy said, it's much easier for her to treat me better. And when she's treating me better, then I treat her better. And all of a sudden, because of we're living out this, living the gospel of sacrificing for others, it makes a big difference in our marriages. And so that is one thing that's really cool that we get to share with people. Yeah, it's not easy, but like you're saying, in the end, if you're striving to do those things well, your life will be better, much better than if you fight for your own.
I feel like I could keep going forever. I want to move on a little bit just because of time. but I feel like I've got just a million questions. I do want to finish up. So you do an 8-week course. How many people usually come to these courses?
So we've done it 11 times. We've had 44 couples graduate. We try to keep it small. So we do it at our house. And the reason we do it at the house instead of in a church is because we want non-believers to come, and non-believers will not set foot in a Christian church because that's a cult. That's, you know, they're going to brainwash you. They're going to do all these things. So we thought, well, we'll just do it in our living room. And then people are coming to a more, well, they think they're coming to a more neutral spot. And we also try to keep it small. The city is known for being super gossipy. Everybody talks about everybody's business. So by keeping it small, one of the things is that we don't ask people to share about their marriages in the course. We're here to all learn together. It's not about what's going on in your home. If you want to do counseling, come and talk to us later. But during the class, we still keep it small so that people feel less intimidated sharing and participating. So we've had, our largest has been
seven or eight
couples, and our smallest is three or four couples. Usually we end up between four and six couples, and it's perfect. It's a perfect size.
And do you, how many of those people do you say, well, how do they find out about it if they're mostly non-believers? Like, how do you promote it?
So the first time we did it, we promoted it in the church, and it was kind of like the core people from the church.
The first couple times
it was the core people from the church. And then it was kind of the next ring out. So we've had a lot of people come through from the church, but over the last year and a half, those people are recommending it to other people. And sometimes they're recommending it to other people. So we're just having people who have had work colleagues or families or friends, word of mouth. Facebook, there's a Facebook page. This last group, we had one couple come that they knew nobody who had taken the course. She had somehow seen something on Facebook, and they signed up like 2.5 months early for the course that started in September. Massa Mi Matrimonio is the name of the class, More in My Marriage. But they signed up for the course, and in between when they had signed up and when the course started, they moved an hour away, and they still came and did the class each week with us.
Wow.
And it's been so. And the other thing is, we had at the beginning, it was all believers because they were all from the church. Now we're almost half and half, believers and non-believers in the last couple groups. And this next time, we had a lot. The only issue is people sign up. When the non-believers sign up, we had 11 couples sign up for the class, and we only had 4 graduate, because often one of them will be super excited and sign them up, but they don't really talk to their spouse about it. And come the beginning of the course, the other spouse says, "I'm not going to that." And that happens more with the non-believing couples because they don't know us. They don't have the same commitment level as somebody from the church who might say, okay, we really need a stronger biblical foundation for our marriage. So we tend to have to sign up a lot more couples. But I think even coming up in January, there's a lot of people who wanted to come in September and couldn't, but the majority are all non-believers.
What do you do? I mean, obviously that course isn't all you're doing. So what else are you doing in the meantime with outside of the 8-week course? Are you doing other counseling as well?
Sure. Something that comes out of it is counseling. We at the very beginning of the course, we say, if you're really struggling in your marriage, you know, if this is kind of the last straw,
I see you.
You may need more than just to come and hear some ways to make your marriage better. And so out of that comes counseling. And I don't know what the number would be of the people that have came that we've done counseling with, but that definitely happens. But then, like Chrissy said, there are friends of a friend that had trouble with their cousin or whatever, and they call up and say, "Hey, we're struggling. Our friend of ours is struggling in marriage. Can they come and see you?" And so that's this couple 2 weeks ago. That's what happened. They were friends of a friend, 3 people removed.
Friends of a friend of a friend.
Yeah. And so the friend called and said, "Hey, we know you're doing this counseling. We heard that you're doing a good job. Would you please talk to these folks? Cause they've seen other people, but they just don't feel like they've made any headway.
This is their last straw.
This is the last straw." So, you know, that's an example of folks that are coming from out of nowhere. And so the counseling comes out of that. Another thing that we've been doing is some mentoring or discipleship. Christy has some folks that she works with, kind of rotates through a group and spends, you know, sometimes there was a couple, we had been here a year and a half, and the husband cheated on his wife, and Chrissy spent the next year and a couple months, once a week, once every week and a half, once every 2 weeks, talking to this woman about forgiveness and what are your expectations, and trying to work through how do you, and both these folks are believers, how do you forgive and try to move on with your life?
Rebuild.
How do you rebuild your marriage? You want to talk about hard stuff. And so, you know, Chrissy spent that time with that lady, and now the couple seems to be doing well. They're back in the church, and they've even expressed some interest to try to help other couples that are going through similar issues. So, you know, some mentoring and discipling. Both Christy and I have some time that is involved with those. Here in Loja, there's we call it the big church of about 300 on a Sunday morning, 250 on a Sunday morning that we go to on a Sunday morning, and then there's some church plants that are anywhere from 10 to 20,
six
to 20 There's two church plants in the city, and immediate, well, close ones. There's two just outside the city, about an hour away each. And one of those small church plants here in the city, from the first day we arrived in town, we've been working alongside of supporting the pastor and his wife. And so that's a little church that when our, they have six kids as well. So when our six are there and their six are there,
the church is huge.
Yeah, it's big. And then there might be another six. So we're talking about 18, but it's not, you know, most of it is our families, but it's not super huge, but we've been going there. We've done some events with them that involve, there's an Operations Christmas Child shoebox distribution about 6 months ago. Chrissy's been teaching English there, both her and I, once a month, help out with Sunday school.
Women's stuff.
Women's studies, some women's events, some men's events, every
Matt,
now and again.
Matt preaches there every once in a while.
Every now and again, I'm preaching to help out a little bit. And both the husband and the wife, Chrissy and I have spent different times supporting them more and supporting them less, but we've been part of their lives, and those are probably two of our best friends here in Loja. So that's another something that we're involved in.
We do a lot of, we do a lot of just trying to build relationships around the city and whatever we're doing. We had, our first car was not the most reliable, and Matt spent a lot of hours at the shop, but it was a good chance to build relationships with the people working in the shop. To the point that in November, Matt and I went to another city 4 hours away, and two hours down the road, we were down the highway, which is just like the highways in Colorado with all the curves. And we're coming around a curve, and he goes, "Oh, there's Angel." And so we went up a little bit, turned the car around, came back. And sure enough, it was this guy that Matt had spent time talking to, you know, the 2 years before. And we were able to stop and visit and just build relationships, talk about what we're doing and ask about how his marriage was. And so we do a lot of, just do a lot of life with people, with the neighbors, with people in shops, just building relationships. And it's been really neat to see how those people have kind of come to seek out counseling or been part of the marriage course, or just know that we're a spot that they can ask for help. And
well, and another thing that's neat is as we build those relationships, there are some times, because we've spent some time with them, where God really opens up an opportunity to talk more about the Bible, talk more about the gospel, to share about what God's doing in our lives, to share about why we're here. And if we weren't deliberate about spending those time with those people, you know, we could just walk up to somebody and say, you know, do you know who Jesus is and you need a personal relationship with him? But when we have relationships with people that God has allowed us to build,
and we've walked through life with them.
We walked through life with them and we spent time with them and they get to see who we are a little bit. All of a sudden that makes our voice, I don't know, louder or more, we have more say in their lives. And that's an exciting thing to be. And so during the marriage course, one of the things that we do is, you know, we share the gospel, you know, and the fact that no matter how nice you are to your wife, without the Holy Spirit in your life, you can only get so far. And the only way to receive the Holy Spirit is to know who Christ is and what he did on the cross. And so, you know, that's some neat pieces that our lives, and like you shared, Aaron, that really we should all be doing those kind of things in our lives, no matter whether we're on the mission field or living this light or whatever we're doing, that's should be part of who we are, taking the people that are close to us and sharing that love of Christ.
There was a couple that when we first got here, we were talking to him a little bit because he was having trouble not having an affair with other women. And we had spent some time talking to him, and I talked to his wife a little bit, and she was super closed. And she would meet with me, and I would share with her, but she just didn't really want to talk. And last week, I hadn't talked to her in 2 years, 2.5 years. And last week she called and she said, "Can we meet next week?" And so we just met on last Friday, and actually she wanted to meet to talk about her sister, but it was really neat to talk to her. This woman was just completely different. She was cheerful, she was outgoing, and she kept saying, "The things that you talked about all those years ago really helped our marriage. The things that we talked about have been helpful," she said, "and my sister's going through all this trouble, and I couldn't think of anybody that she could talk to help in this, and then I remembered you guys. And I really wanted you to talk to her." And it's just been really neat to see how just planting seeds. And then sometimes you even forget that there was a seed somewhere. And then you get to see this little plant growing and somebody saying, "Hey, I want to hear what
you guys have to say, I want to hear what the Bible, because I said to her, I said, well, if you're counseling your sister, don't counsel her with what the culture says. Try and share with her what the Bible says. And she said, well, I don't even know what the Bible says. I said, well, start here, reading here. And so as she's looking for help for her sister, it was an opportunity to share, to direct her towards the Word of God, to be able to prepare herself to help her sister. And it was just, it's so cool.
I'm just loving this. I feel like I'm talking a lot less tonight than I ever do, because I'm enjoying listening. I feel like it feels like just mini testimony after mini testimony after mini testimony, and the power in that. And it's awesome to hear, guys. I'm so stoked for, I was really excited to have this conversation because I knew a little bit about what was going on, but there's just so much meat here. And I think what you're saying so well, and this is something that everybody can do, you're meeting people where they're at. You're meeting them in their marriages, which are difficult or hurting, and interjecting the gospel. And from there, you know, sometimes seeing where it goes. And I don't know. I'm thrilled about it. I think it's a really cool ministry. So I don't know. I feel like I've seriously just been kind of like drooling over the material, listening to you guys tell stories. This is the type of thing when you're getting ready to write or you're getting ready to do the podcast. This has just been awesome. So, yeah, I know. I mean, I didn't even realize. I just looked at the clock. We're at an hour and 10 minutes. So we probably need to start thinking about finishing up. But at the same time, I guess, is there anything else? Let's just do a couple more questions. And then I try to do kind of one silly question at the end just for fun. And then I'll maybe pray for you guys. And then we'll I'll let you go on your way, because I think it's getting pretty late where you're at. So I'll let you go shortly. I guess the biggest thing I want to know is there anything else about your ministry, about your lives? Well, how can we pray for you? How can we, because a big part of this podcast and about this whole thing is developing our relationship with you as a ministry partner. How can we continue to support you? We're going to talk about the financial piece in a bit, but what are other ways that we can support you through prayer, through communicating with you? What are things that you need that we can help with?
Our consistent prayer request over the last several, since we've been here, is for balance. Because, you know, at the beginning you were like, six kids. Yes, there are six.
Oh, wait, we didn't even throw. Yeah, you didn't. Christy's also homeschooling the six kids too.
Oh, my heart hurts.
So our biggest prayer request is balance in that, that we are really cognizant of how we spend our time, that we don't let our family as a priority slip, that we don't let our marriage as a priority slip, that we are, you know, super discerning as we meet with people and try and share, and that we're able to not be, it's not easy stuff listening to these stories. It's heavy. It can be really heavy. And sometimes we have to remember, I have to remember to step away, that, you know, I have to try and learn better still how to step away and take a break and recharge. So our biggest prayer request is always for balance, to do the things that we need to do with all of our hearts, but also know when to stop, to do them well, to do them carefully. Something that we talk about, we did a parenting class a couple months ago and this came up, but every yes is a no. And so every time somebody calls and says, it's an emergency, can we meet with you? Well, that's a no to maybe doing something that I had planned with the kids or maybe doing something else. So we just have to be really careful that, you know, we choose our yes as well, and that we put good boundaries on our no's. So that's probably our biggest prayer request for us personally as a couple and as a family and as a home here. But what's the other one, huh?
Another prayer request would be, so like Christy shared, we've been doing this for about three and a half years, and God kind of brought it onto us, and we were figuring out as we're going, but we realized that we need to be thinking about not necessarily like multiplying it just to be able to say, oh my goodness, there's, you know, three classes in Loja, one here, one there, whatever. But thinking about how do we get local people involved in the class as well and teaching. And so a prayer request would be
some of the biggest problems.
That being that you know, God would lead us to some couples that have taken the class, that
are believers.
That are believers, that are willing to teach. But here's a couple of little pieces that go with that. One, the way we teach it is pretty informal, which is a little bit different than the culture here. Typically, someone who is teaching a subject, they're supposed to be the experts on it, and when they stand up and they kind of give a lecture, and people take notes and listen. And there's more like a sermon, kind of. You know, you present something and people take it in. But the way we teach it is we sit down, we sit in a circle. Like Christy said, you know, we're asking people, what do you know about this? What do you know about that? We lead the discussion, but it's very discussion based. And we try to be a little funny and it's a little fun. And anyways, so to try to find someone who fits kind of that model is something we'd like to try and find. The other piece that we're hoping to find, need to find, is they need to have a strong marriage,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Right? As you guys know, the moment you try to say, I'm not gonna fight with my wife, what happens the next day? I mean, you have the biggest fight you've ever had in your life. And so we don't want someone that's struggling. You know, we have one couple and they could be great. But just coming out of not quite an affair, but really close, it's about as close as you can get. And so, you know, that so we want to be smart about it. We don't want to turn it over, but to try to bring someone alongside of us and then have it be a burden on their marriage. And so, you know, and then there's some other questions too, is how much are people's time? How much time do they actually have? Because it's not like super time consuming, but you get to know the people and it's fun and it's exciting and it's interesting.
And are they able to separate themselves enough from what the culture says to be able to teach what the Bible says without, you know, we have just the unique perspective is we're not part of this culture. So we're not held in by that, but to be able to find a couple that can separate themselves enough from what the culture dictates and what their family dictates to be able to just focus on what the Bible teaches.
Right. So, I mean, that prayer request would be that God would really help us see. I think we're hoping for 3 or 4 couples maybe to start to kind of go through the course again just with them and then have
mentor them,
mentor and disciple them, and then have them, we go through it a third time and where each different couple is teaching a week. And anyways, you know, of trying to raise up some other people to be teachers as well, because if there's 200,000 people in here, you know, Matt and Christy working at, you know, whatever, 30 couple, if it was possible to get 30 couples a year, it's going to take us a long time to get through all 200,000 people. And so, you know, that's a definite prayer request that God would lead us to people that are prepared, that have a good enough marriage, and to teach the course in a way that's interesting and dynamic.
Well, that's awesome. We will be, I'm going to put both of those in our, in the article, as well as we do a slide with a prayer request each month for our missionaries. So we'll make sure that those are on the forefront of how we can help and how we can support you through prayer, because I think that'd be huge. I mean, and they kind of seem to catalyst off of each other, right? If you have help and if you have people that you're working with, you know, that makes it easier. It doesn't feel like the whole burden falls on you, which gives you some of that balance that you were talking about, Christy, as well. So I will tell you that the best line from this whole thing, when my wife hears you say that every yes is a no, there's going to be a lot of, I told you so. That's what's going to be happening. I can already feel it. I already know that's coming.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, Aaron, you know what's hilarious? We had to come all the way to Ecuador to learn that.
Well, perfect. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, no, seriously. We didn't come up with that until we were here and working on the course. And there, it was a busy time. And we're like, man, whatever it was, you know, someone called up and said, hey, would you say do a basketball ministry on Saturdays or something? I don't remember what it was, but all of a sudden we realized that was a really good yes. I mean, a good God honoring yes. But we had to say no because it wasn't good for our family.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I love that. I think that although I also think that you're trying. I see what you're saying. You're trying to get me to come to Ecuador. I'm just kidding. But no, that's. It's true. I think that's something that is, I mean, it's a huge part of my life, and it's something that you constantly look at, okay, yeah, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. And you just constantly say yes. Especially when you start to have kids, it becomes harder and harder for your family. And you start to realize that that does have an impact, you know, when your kid is, you know, struggling with something and you didn't even know it was going on or whatever that is. I don't know. That's definitely powerful. So I think that's going to be something I'm going to hear about it again. I guarantee it. So, but well, guys, let me do one. So one kind of quick fun question. I'm going to ask you just to kind of share a fun story. And then I'm just going to pray for you. And then we'll, and then I'm going to do some financial stuff. Cause I always tell people they got to give us money too. So that's important. So I've found that missionaries aren't very good at asking for money and I don't mind. So I'll ask.
Great.
Yeah. Let me do this. What is in the mission field? I've asked a lot of stuff like what's the weirdest thing you've eaten or what's the weirdest thing you've done? But because you're in a unique situation where you have six kids, what is the most unique, or let's put it this way, what is the most frustrating thing or difficult thing that has happened to your family that when you look back on it is like, I cannot believe that was such a big deal? Or just, you know, like a goofy thing where maybe there was a big fight in the family or something, and then you're just like, what was that even about? Or what was the point? Because I imagine that happens sometimes when you have eight different personalities in the same room, in the same van, traveling, et cetera, et cetera.
Hey, we're trying to think.
Truthfully, the six of them get along really well. So that makes life a lot easier.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But one thing Matt said is trying to get a family picture is a gong show and a half.
Really?
Because you have to get 16 eyes looking in one direction.
There's always a baby
and everybody's heads have to be at the same height. And so yesterday I said to them, we have to take a picture because I know that you guys wanted one. And we've had a couple other requests from other churches that say we need an updated picture. So, okay, everybody, let's go take a picture, but we promise it won't be long. Let's just do it. And so that's always a bit of a conundrum.
I think you might have answered the question perfectly a second ago, Matt, when you just said, there's always a baby. I feel like that's...
JJ said yesterday, he's like, well, of course we're going to have other brothers and sisters coming. We're like, no, honey.
No more. We're done.
Six is good.
Oh, that's awesome. So you are done. You're not planning on having any more then?
Oh, who knows? Yeah. That's up to God, we're not planning on it. We had one woman here. We had one woman here a few years ago. We didn't have Annalia. We had JJ and he was little. And she's a pastor's wife about an hour away. And 70, she had 70. She's 70, had barely met us. Like, hi, how are you? I'm Christy. I'm Lucia Vichita. And she was like, don't have any more children. We had just gotten together for a pastor's retreat. It was a 2-day retreat. She said, don't have any more children. I was really taken aback. That kind of hit I wasn't happy with that. So anyways, we had this retreat and I kind of was a little put off the whole time. And we got to the end of the retreat and everybody was standing up to say different things about what they had learned and how God had impacted them. And the same woman stood up and she said, you know, this family has been the most impactful thing for me in this retreat, with all of these children and how they get along and how the kids behave and blah, 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 blah. And she kept going on. And I don't feel as bad about her anymore because it did hurt my feelings. But then when we found out we were pregnant with Annalia, I went to her and I laughed. And I laughed and I said, so now what are you going to say? And she said, it's okay. Have this. She said, it's no problem. But after the baby was born, she said, you probably shouldn't have any more.
Someday you're going to have to tell Annalia that, you know, we had you to spite somebody. And that's our story. No, I'm just kidding. That's awesome. I think it's great.
We had to show her.
I think it's awesome. I think Kevin, I mean, I joke a lot about our kid, but having six kids, I think that's got to just be crazy all the time, but also super fun. So I don't know. I think it's cool. I think it's great. I'll give you a hard time because I know that life is just hectic and crazy, but it's got to be great. So I support
it's
you.
It's a lot of fun.
You don't have to have another child despite me. No, I'm just kidding.
We can't put any of them back. So, that's, you know, right? We got to stay this way.
What are you going to do? Exactly. Well, guys, I'm going to just pray for you real quick. And then I think we're going to call it a night if that's right with you.
Sounds good.
Oh, yep. Actually, I have to do one more thing real quick. See, this is why I have notes. One thing that we need to know, how do people get on and support you directly? How can they get on and support you financially through World Venture? Do they go to worldventure.com, type in a number? How do they do that? What's the best way to give to your ministry?
You know what? That's a great question. Christy is hopping online just to make sure she's going to tell you the right information.
So I know you can go to worldventure.com/the Messick crew and go directly in.
Perfect.
But let me look and see.
And that will be a link. Everybody, I've been talking about it. Last month was a little different with Don and Brenda, but you can get on the mission-minded link on Grace Church Salida, and I will have this linked there so you can just click the link and donate and give to the Messick ministry as well. So, if there's an easier way or if there's something else, let us know.
Can I get back to you on that, Aaron?
Yeah, no problem. I'll put it in the, like I said, I'll put it online, I'll put it in the writing, and I'll also throw it in the little outro that we do. So, but worldventure.com/the Messick crew, and you should be able to donate directly there. So awesome. All right. Well, let me pray for you guys real quick. And thank you so much for just hanging out with me tonight and sharing all these stories. It's been pretty amazing. I've been looking forward to it all month, and it definitely lived up to my hype. So thank you.
This was super fun.
It's easy.
Yeah. Hey, Aaron, one more thing before you hop off there. About 2 years ago, it's almost 2 years ago now, we were home back in the U.S. And we started off in Pennsylvania, went to Colorado, Canada, finished back up in Pennsylvania. Since we've been back, one of the things that's been really interesting, this is relative to Salida, is whenever our kids think about their most favorite time, it always revolves around Salida. We were home for about six, seven, eight months. And
we stayed at the McKnight's house.
We stayed in the McKnight's house, and we got to know the Johnsons for the first time. And, man, got to see George and Don and their families. And
all the Inge kids.
The Inge kids, and got to renew some relationships that we hadn't been around for quite a while. We were there for almost a full month, and the kids got to go to youth group. Joan and Mike, our two oldest, went to youth group four Wednesdays in a row, or whatever it is, four Wednesdays. And that was like so unbelievable. Anyways, I just want to make sure that everyone realizes that we really appreciated our time while it was there. We had a really good time getting to see old friends, getting to make new friends, and it was
people reaching out
to our kids. It was a wonderful time for us. And as we just think about, like I said, when the kids talk about being, and in a year and a half or so, we're planning to be back again in the U.S. One of the questions is, how long are we going to spend in Salida? And a lot of that has to do with Grace Church. And so just, that's something we want to make sure. And we have a little baby in our arms right now. But we want to make sure that you guys hear that, how important that piece was, not just to Christy and I, but to our kids, that they really felt
welcomed.
They really felt welcome, because when we left, they were almost too little to really remember much. So anyways, I just wanted to throw that in there before we hopped off.
I'm so thankful to hear that, because that's one of the pieces that we're trying to accomplish, is how to make this even more, how to make you feel more like you're part of our family. Because this is a family, you know, Grace Church is a family, and you're part of our family, even though you're not here directly with us all the time. But I'm so proud to hear that the church meant that much to you. Because there's a lot of new faces, as you found out, and you're gonna continue to meet new people even through the podcast and through coming back to Salida next time. And I don't know, I'm that's what I love about Grace Church too. So I'm thrilled to hear that you're here, you're feeling that as well. But thank you so much. Let's pray real quick, and then I'm gonna let you guys go. So hang on one second. I'm actually okay. We're good. Now I'm gonna pray for you guys. Sorry about that. Father God, we just we thank you so much for this time that we got to be together tonight and learn more about Matt and Christy's time in Ecuador and the history of what got them there, and just the story that you are writing in their lives, Father. And we thank you so much for just the lives that they're impacting
the marriages that they're getting to help. I think that that's one of the greatest gifts that you've given to us is marriage and relationships with other people. And so to be able to help and support people in growing those marriages is such a beautiful thing. And we just thank you for their hearts in that and their willingness to do that. We do pray that they'd be able to find their balance, with it between family and, just understanding how they can support and do ministry and still be a family and still be effective in all those different ways, Father. And we lift up just this request that you'd bring other couples into their lives that would be able to help them teach and be a part of this ministry. And we just ask that it would be someone who is founded in the Bible and in the gospel and also has a strong marriage and just a good personality that fits. And we just pray that you'd bring them along soon and help that ministry to continue to grow, Father. And we're so thankful for Matt and Christy and all six of their kids. And we thank you so much for what their ministry means to Grace as well, Father. And in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen.
Awesome. Thank you guys. It really has been just a ton of fun. So, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the time, Aaron.
Okay. I told you were going to have a lot of fun and I hope you did. It's so good to get to catch up with Matt and Christy. I think you heard in the podcast, I was kind of back from college, in and out of college at the time when they had first gone to the mission field. And I remember them clearly being just defeated and it being very difficult, even in the conversations with my parents, who have been in the church for a long time, getting to know a little bit of Matt and Christy through an outsider's perspective, but just understanding the defeat that you can feel in that. But then if you listen to them, the excitement and the energy they have is just palpable. And they are where God wanted them, without a doubt. And they are impacting people in their lives, but interjecting the gospel in such a beautiful way. I really hope you enjoyed the show. I had a lot of fun. I looked forward to that all month, and it lived up totally to what I expected it would be. Definitely check out the previous episodes if you haven't had a chance. Episodes 1, 2, and 3, there's some really good stuff in all of them. You can always reach out to me. Again, my email is honeycakesdobbs@hotmail.com. That's Dobbs, D-O-B-S. And feel free to ask questions if you have things that you'd like to talk to missionaries about or stuff you'd like me to talk about. I'm super excited about where this podcast is going. We've got a lot of listeners that are starting to show up and it's just a ton of fun. So get to learn more people from Grace Church. Thanks for joining me tonight. Look forward to seeing you next time.
Fountain in his face. sins away. Wash all my sins away. Wash all my sins away. And there may I go vile as he. Wash all my sins away. Yeah.